Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Our drug laws in this country as a whole need a revolution of common sense and compassion.
For starters, it would do something scientists have been begging for: reschedule cannabis from Schedule 1 to a much less restrictive Schedule 2 controlled substance.
Once you make the class of drugs Schedule 2, you can then research it and find out what are the medical impacts and when can you use it, when does it make sense. So that's what's necessary here. It's so simple.
The bill would also mandate more farms to grow research-grade marijuana and allow greater access to it for those in need, including veterans, who would, for the first time, be able to get a prescription for medicinal marijuana from the VA hospitals.
Let's stop the pot hypocrisy. We now have had three presidents that have admitted to smoking marijuana. People in public office all throughout the Senate have said, hey, I've smoked marijuana recreationally. How much of a hypocrite do you have to be to say that I broke American laws using pot as a recreational thing, and that I'm not going to support this idea that as a medicine for severely sick people, that they shouldn't be able to access this drug?
It's an important question, a question that I took to the President of the United States.
There's a bill on the floor of the Senate.
United States.
There's a bill on the floor of the Senate.
On record as saying that I think I'd have to take a look at the details, but I'm on record as saying that not only do I think carefully prescribed medical use of marijuana may in fact be appropriate and we should follow the science as opposed to ideology on this issue.
For you. Let's talk with marijuana, because I was saying to you, I've never smoked marijuana, so I'm curious about what it does for you. And you describe it as an old friend who has never betrayed you.
I think, you know, it calms me down. Yeah. And I used to drink a lot. I used to smoke a lot of cigarettes. Now I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think substituting pot for cigarettes and alcohol, it was a smart choice.
You say about pot, my love affair with pot became a long-term marriage. It was by far the smoothest of all my marriages.
It's worked out so far.
It's worked out so far.
You think the whole country will legalize marijuana?
Yeah.
How long?
5 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think the way it's going now, and it may, you know, it may be quicker than that. Once all the so-called smart people see the money, see the bottom line, look at Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and say, wait a minute, we're losing out.
And not everybody supports the legalization of marijuana. Mm-hmm. Do you worry about the use of it because it's now become so widespread in states where it's legal for recreational use? Do you worry about underage children?
Well, underage children shouldn't be putting anything in their lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Pot smoke or cigarette smoke or any other kind of smoke, if they can help it, it's not good for their lungs, and probably not good for their brains. You know, let their brains get a little smarter, you know, before they start trying things. And I think that's why you need to be an adult to make those decisions.
You know, the argument always against it was that it somehow leads to other kinds of addictions,
yeah,
whether it's cocaine or heroin.
I would be the first to say that's wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it eliminates other addictions for me, and I can only speak for myself.
And he confirms in the book, guys, that he did smoke marijuana at the White House.
On the roof
of the White House.
I heard I did.
Yeah.
When you were a guest of Jimmy Carter, right?
Yeah. Yes, I was.
How'd you get up on the roof?
I don't remember.
Nora, there was a friend of his that knocked on the door and said, hey, Willie, you want to go to the roof?
I want to go to the roof. And I said, why not?
Any regrets, Mr. Nelson?
No.
No. I think that's a great life. You can sit here at 82 and say no regrets.
No.
Yeah.
Lived a very full
life.
Great
to have you here.
Thank you, Charlie.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Very nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
Great. Willie Nelson.
The name of the book is called It's a Long Story. It's available wherever you like to buy your new books.
That, of course, is the great Willie Nelson talking about his experience with marijuana. This is Mark Levin, host of the Inside Scoop, reporting live from Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I wanted to play those clips for you because marijuana has come a long way from the first days when Willie Nelson was smoking it on the roof of the White House, Jimmy Carter's White House. And there's some real questions about whether or not it has valid medical uses. I think it does, but the real answer is not to ask what I think or what anyone else thinks or Cory Booker or Kirsten Gillibrand or Jill Brand or the President of the United States. It's to let the scientists determine what those uses are, to determine if it's valid or if it's not valid. You know, I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it is. What I am saying is that the number of patients have at least anecdotally made clear that it helps them with pain and particularly nausea from glaucoma, from cancer drugs. AIDS patients have talked about it. And why can't we at least study it? You know, marijuana is what's called a Schedule I drug. That means that there is no valid use for it. It's like arsenic or poison or, drinking nails. Okay, there's no use for that. You don't want to be drinking nails. You don't want to be drinking arsenic. But, in fact, even arsenic has some medical uses and some limited capacities, and I'm no doctor. But it's Schedule I. Cocaine is Schedule II.
What?
Morphine is Schedule II. We all know there are legitimate medical uses for morphine. Morphine is used usually at someone's end of life to blot out all pain. It usually puts someone to sleep. But a lot of times when someone takes morphine, that's it. They don't come back or they're very, very drugged. But these drugs, these very severe drugs, have legitimate uses. Why not marijuana? And again, I'm not saying it does. I am no scientist. But coming up after the break, I have a guest. His name is Hampton Sides. Am I pronouncing his name right, Mark? Sides. It's not Sidus. Okay. Hampton Sides is the author of the National Geographic June cover story. So it's coming out right now in your National Geographic. It's called Weed, the New Science of Marijuana. And he has been studying the scientific aspects of medical marijuana, which, by the way, is entirely different concern from whether or not it should be legalized recreationally. I happen to think it should be. I think Colorado, Washington State. At the end of the day, you should only be regulated by harm you do to others or severe harm you do to yourself. And I wouldn't hire anybody who was stoned. I wouldn't. So, and Mark, if you're on drugs right now, I'm sorry. I got to let you go. I think Mark is probably safe. Mark's not saying anything.
I think honestly, to produce a radio show, I couldn't be stoned because actually, Mark, you know more about production than I think a lot of hosts do.
That's true.
And to have to produce on the fly, Exhibit A, the beginning of this show, I won't go behind the scenes, but I think if I was stoned and I had to get those two clips together, yeah, I don't think I would have pulled it off.
Fair enough. You've just passed your drug test, Mark Grimaldi, yeah. So you're okay there. I will
say one thing, though, Mark.
Yeah.
I think that if I, you know, for instance, if it was legal here where I live in New York, I don't see any reason, you know, I don't have time to do this and I have a child, so I couldn't. But say I was still single or I had time or I was on vacation, I don't see anything wrong with me on a, you know, Friday after work or a Saturday, if it was legal, going out and smoking a joint with my friends at a concert or something, you know, sobering up before I would have to drive or anything or having a designated driver just like I did if I was drinking,
right,
and coming back into work on Monday. I just think it's total hypocrisy to say that that's okay for alcohol, but then to say that's not okay for marijuana. I just think it doesn't make any sense.
And I compare it to cigarettes. Cigarettes, and please, please do not smoke tobacco. Tobacco will kill you. Tobacco and the drug in it, nicotine, is the most addictive drug known to man. Once you start a cigarette, studies show that once you have two cigarettes, you're already more likely to be addicted than not. In fact, most people that have two cigarettes end up being full-time smokers. Cigarettes are very, very dangerous, and all tobacco products. Marijuana is far less addictive than cigarettes. It does have negative properties to your health. I'm sure it's not good for your lungs to put any kind of substance like that in.
There's actually a lot of studies coming out now, and in Washington, I have a friend who lives in Seattle, and he said the edibles market for marijuana is huge because people who want the benefits of it medically, you know, for the relaxation properties or whatever, some people who have, you know, illnesses who need to stimulate their appetite, you know, cancer patients after chemotherapy or recreationally if they want the benefits of it. ingesting it, you actually have to, I was reading a study, you have to ingest it in larger amounts, and the properties or whatever, the benefits you get from it are more delayed. However, you don't have anything come into your lungs at all. Like you have it in brownies or cookies or candy or baking.
I want to be clear. This is not the marijuana endorsement show. I am not being paid by any marijuana interest.
No, I think we're just being honest. And
I want to be clear. No, some people don't think I'm some kind of paid hack for the marijuana industry.
No, you've never even tried marijuana.
I have
so you'd
never,
be the last person.
I have
to say
never
that.
Ever tried marijuana either by ingesting or by smoking, and I never will. And I'll be very clear about that. Unless, who knows, maybe if I catch, you know, get glaucoma or cancer or some drug where I, some disease where I feel the drug will help me, then I may try it. But I have no intention of trying it. The only really drug I ever take is alcohol, and that in very limited doses. I'm kind of too much of a nerd to be
your drugs
a big
are board
marijuana
games,
smoker.
Marks. I've been to your house.
Board games.
Mark's drug
maps,
of choice is board games. He
maps,
has a whole wall of
encyclopedias.
Board games. I think if we ever had to like go to a bomb shelter for some reason, if I could get to your house with a lantern, although I'd never want to play you because I don't think I'd ever win a single game, but still.
I am a little bit competitive, I grant you that.
I'm sorry, did you say a little?
In any case, coming up next, Hampton Sides, the author of Weed, the New Science of Marijuana. We're going to talk about the real medical benefits, or lack thereof, of marijuana, and why, obviously, it should not be considered a drug more dangerous than cocaine. This is Mark Levine. You want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar, and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Hampton Sides. He's the author of the National Geographic June cover story coming out just in a couple weeks. It may even be on your newsstands now, called Weed, the New Science of Marijuana. Hampton, welcome to The Inside Scoop.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
You talk a lot in the article about all the different possible medical benefits of cannabis, of marijuana. But one of the things I really like about your article is you're not an unabashed champion. You point out that the Israeli scientist who's kind of celebrated in the marijuana world, that even he points out that for young minds it can affect the brain. Let's talk about his studies first. This is Mechulam, I believe is his name.
Yes, Raphael Mechulam.
Raphael Mechulam. So Raphael Mechulam has been studying this since, I guess, the early 1960s.
That's right.
Tell you what, before we get to his studies, cannabis has been used, as you point out, for millennia. I mean, used by the ancient Chinese, used by... When did it become the boogeyman? I know in 1970 it became a Schedule I drug, but when it must have been before then that people reefer madness. How did that all start?
Well, it went back to the 1930s, and I don't go into this in the article too much, but there are a number of kind of conspiracy theories that it had to do with a lot to do with hemp and the fact that the pulp, the like companies like Weyerhaeuser felt threatened by this very easy to grow plant that produces this unparalleled fiber. There's certainly some kernel truth to some of the conspiracy theories that you'll hear in terms of industrial concerns that were threatened by hemp.
But hemp has been used as a rope for, I mean, the colonialists used hemp. So
right. And we still use hemp, by the way, as rope in the United States. We just can't grow it here. So we import many millions, if not billions, of dollars worth of hemp from China and from Canada, which is a really stupid policy.
Yeah.
Because we know it's a great product. So, you cannot get high from it. It's genetically distinct.
But help me out. Reefer Madness, those famous black and white things right. we've seen from the 1950s, where, you know, I don't know, you're screaming, the monster's coming, and it's Reefer. Where did this come from?
It's completely made up. And, you know, it largely came from the mind of this one guy named Anslinger, who was the drug czar, basically, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And he's been called the J. Edgar Hoover of marijuana, in a sense of just really demonizing and villainizing this plant.
The point is that he just didn't like people getting high?
If you want to point to one person who really set that thing in motion of it being this terrifying, evil plant that causes people to go on murderous rampages, ruins the youth of America, and will undermine our whole sort of industrial system and capitalism, it was that man.
It always strikes me that I forgot who it was who famously said about the Republican Party, this is the party of people who are very much concerned that somewhere someone is having some fun. You know, that's why they hate sex drugs. They hate sex drugs and rock and roll.
In terms of politics today, this issue skews pretty evenly. You know, like Republicans perhaps because of the libertarian aspect of this, are almost as in favor as Democrats in many states.
In the 50s? It's just that people getting high just seemed really irresponsible. Maybe the same kind of images of people, you know, who wanted to stamp out alcohol and prohibition. I mean, that failed, so now they got to go on to something else, I guess.
Yeah. I suppose those were all factors. I mean, there's certainly a deep puritanical streak in our country. It's, you know, goes back hundreds of years. But at the same time, marijuana, cannabis, was a legal drug in the United States up until the 1930s. It was in tinctures and extracts. It was part of the pharmacopoeia. It was used in all kinds of oils and so forth, many of them probably not that effective, but it was certainly not illegal until the 1930s.
So the 1930s, it starts to be illegal, and then in 1970, it becomes a Schedule I drug for which there's no legitimate purpose whatsoever. Not, as I pointed out, and I think I'm correct here, cocaine is Schedule II. Mm-hmm. In other words, there are some legitimate uses for cocaine, according to the law, none for marijuana.
Right. It's in the same category as heroin. You know, basically, extremely addictive, high potential for abuse, absolutely no medical value. That's what the federal government's current position is on this drug. And
now, was there any science at the time?
They come from the plant.
But was there any science at the time in 1970 that would suggest anything other than people had a, you know, used to be very sedate and want to eat Doritos? I mean, I know the science of heroin. I mean, heroin addicts, you get all strung out and lie in the gutter. I mean,
and you die.
Yeah, I mean, heroin's very dangerous. Cocaine is very dangerous. Crack. I'm not saying no drugs are dangerous.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, we got to take a quick break, Captain. When we come back, I want to understand why they thought it was so dangerous in the 1970s or 1960s. And then I want to get on to Rafael Mechoulam and the other scientists who've shown there's been some real important medical uses for marijuana. Folks, if you want to call in and join this discussion, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Would love to hear from you, either from your personal experience. And if you oppose legalization of marijuana, heck, I want to hear you too. This is Mark Levine. Be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My host is Hampton Sides. He's the author of the cover story of June National Geographic. You want to check that out. The article is called Weed, the New Science of Marijuana. Hampton Sides, we were talking about how Reefer Madness sort of got everyone hating marijuana. In the 1950s, 60s, became a Schedule I drug in 1970. And then an Israeli chemist by the name of Rafael Mechoulam, who you call, I think, the patron saint of cannabis science.
The patriarch
of cannabis science. Mechoulam basically was the first researcher to isolate THC, the drug that makes you high, the aspect of cannabis that that leads to those effects, and found that it had a variety of positive medical uses. What were some of those?
Well, you know, his first, I need to back up and mention that he's a chemist. He was mainly interested in just figuring out the chemical composition of this plant. You know, it's like we knew a lot about opiates. We knew a lot about almost every other kind of drug, mind-altering drug, but we knew nothing about this common ordinary weed that grows around the world in almost every ecosystem and is, you know, it's like grows in ditches. It is a weed. It is a weed. And so he's like, well, why can't I study this? And he was aware of the fact that elsewhere, especially in the United States, serious scientists would risk their careers, their reputations, basically just getting them the material to study, let alone trying to study it because of the Schedule One issue that we were talking about, and just the general policies about the plant. So he got to studying and ultimately isolated and named, you know, THC, and was actually successful in synthesizing it. And once he did that, he did begin to experiment with the drug in terms of its uses, in terms of nausea, in terms of as a pain reliever. It's an analgesic. It's anti-inflammatory. He found out that it's a bronchodilator. It has a lot of medical benefits, and began, he and his group, to publish these findings back in the 1960s. And, you know, it just took forever for the scientific community, particularly in the United States, to begin to take these reports seriously.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, and that's why I asked you the questions about Reefer Madness before the break, is why were people so skeptical? I mean, we all understand that there are drugs that have good and bad uses. I mean, every drug on television, it tells you the good thing it's for, and then it spends, you know, 2 minutes telling you about the awful side effects. Exactly. Can cause death. Right. And I pointed out before the break that morphine, which is a very dangerous drug, is used medically, tends to be at the end of life for pain issues. In fact, even arsenic, which is the ultimate poison, I believe can have some medical benefit, although I'm no chemist in certain circumstances. Why would anyone be surprised that this weed, this chemical, like so many other chemicals, can have both positive and negative benefits?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually think that one of the factors here is that pharmaceutical companies that make all those other drugs you're talking about have had a difficult time trying to figure out how to make money off of this plant.
It's too easy to grow.
It's everywhere. You can't patent marijuana. You can try to patent the various extraction techniques, or you can take an individual compound and synthesize it and then slightly chemically alter it. Then you can patent that. But so I think that's one of the
things. I see. So water has medical benefits too, but since it's very hard to get a patent on water, you know, until they thought of the great plastic bottling technique that's ruining our landfills everywhere, they couldn't profit off of it very much. I mean, that's really what it is. It's you can profit off of tobacco or alcohol more easily than you can profit off of cannabis.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, there was a racial aspect to all of this too. When Reefer Madness came on the scene, marijuana really wasn't popular drug except among like jazz musicians and in the black
really
community.
So African Americans were and Mexicans
and,
white
yeah,
people didn't do
like that drug that other people use and the white establishment and especially this guy Anslinger just kind of put it in this category of the other.
Interesting.
We have our own drugs we use, like alcohol, but that drug, dangerous, evil.
Gotcha. Now the Israeli scientist Mechulam, you write, has brought, his work led to a major medical marijuana program in Israel. They've used it, people, more than 20,000 patients, you write, have a license to use it for glaucoma, Crohn's disease, inflammation, appetite loss, Tourette's syndrome, and asthma. Now, people like it, people want it, they say it for these medical uses. Do we know that it actually works, or could it just be that a glaucoma patient is suffering and their eyes hurt and they forget all about it when they're on marijuana, and it really isn't the marijuana that's doing the trick? Can we prove it scientifically?
Or, is it, you know, the placebo effect?
Well,
or,
right.
Or
exactly.
Else? We can begin to prove it just like we prove anything else in the medical world through longitudinal studies that cost a lot of money, that require a lot of grant money, that require, you know, years and years of data. It has begun to happen, and if anyone is at the forefront of publishing data, epidemiological data and data about the specific uses of cannabis, it's Israel. But, you know, there's certainly a dearth. We need more. We need more not only to understand does it work, but what is the mechanism of action? How does it work?
Now, is a problem that with studies being controls? I mean, I can take a pill and I can take a sugar pill and I don't know the difference. They look the same. And
right.
We can really see whether the pill did anything.
Right.
With marijuana, I don't think there's a placebo that also gets you high.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to compare, right?
Yeah, well, a lot of times the drug in question, the active ingredient that we're dealing with some of these ailments is CBD, which is another extremely important compound in marijuana. It does not get you high at all; has no psychoactive effects. So some of these studies involving CBD, it is very easy to come up with a placebo.
Okay, so CBD, now this is very interesting. So there's two substances, I know there's like 84 or something, but there's two substances in marijuana that are known to have medical effects. One is THC and one is CBD.
Right.
And they're
different.
And Makulam
in Israel was also instrumental in isolating, identifying CBD. A lot of the energy, a lot of the enthusiasm in terms of medical marijuana that you hear about is all about CBD. This other component. You've probably heard about the families in Colorado who've moved there because their children are suffering from these horrible, horrible seizures, and they're deriving
epilepsy
benefits from what is essentially CBD.
And CBD can stop epilepsy, at least they think so.
What you'll also hear is the word anecdotal. It anecdotally seems to be very true, but the DEA and the CDC and FDA are saying it's just anecdotal. Well, the reason it's only anecdotal as opposed to us having the actual science to prove it is because we're not allowed to study it in humans in this country.
Now,
that is beginning to change with regard to CBD, but it's kind of that catch-22, the government's position on this drug.
Is it been found anecdotally, or maybe in a medical journal in a place like Israel where it's legal to do this, has it been found that THC does certain good things and bad things, and CBD does different good things and bad things, or that in combination, in other words, could it be that CBD is what they need for glaucoma and THC is what they need for Tourette syndrome, and they're actually different, they have different uses?
Absolutely true. Although there's even a more interesting factor, which is that I think a lot of these scientists are beginning to recognize that when you isolate one compound and you apply it to whatever ailment, you may get a positive effect. But these two compounds, CBD and THC, seem to work together and are greater than the sum of their parts. Makulam calls it the entourage effect, this notion that these two compounds and all the other cannabinoids and flavonoids and terpenes and all these compounds in this very complicated plant seem to be more potent when they're working together, like the entire plant. But pharmaceutical companies like to isolate one compound that they can synthesize and precisely measure.
And sell with a patent.
That's the way a pharmaceutical company.
The poor weed is too easy to grow.
Plant itself is just kind of okay the way it is, you know. But it's hard to make money off of it, and it is hard to dose. That is an issue, particularly with edibles in Colorado, but in all kinds of issues here. The dosage question of getting a precise dose is something that science is working on.
Is there any reason to believe that eating, ingesting marijuana has significantly different effects from smoking marijuana?
It does in some people, and it's because everyone has a very different kind of metabolism, a different kind of gastrointestinal tract. We absorb at different rates. And some people get really nauseous, get sick from this stuff. Some people start to feel effects fairly quickly. Others takes hours and hours Some people throw up violently. You know, it's just like it's a very different thing. Whereas if you smoke it, you know within minutes, within seconds, really, kind of where you stand. So really, I think most people who are taking it for medical reasons are either smoking it or sometimes they're taking it sublingually in the form of an oil. So they can get a pretty immediate kind of reaction where they are.
Now, Mechoulam, for being the patron or the patriarch of cannabis science, he's not entirely rah-rah. You're right.
No.
He says that marijuana is not innocuous, especially for young people, because it can change the way the developing brain grows.
Right,
so let's be fair here.
Tell us
the negative aspects, particularly
right.
for young people.
Yeah. Well, he, and this is very important. I've got three teenage boys of my own, and, you know, they're very curious about me doing this story, and that is one thing that comes through the literature loud and clear, not just from him, but from a lot of other people, that the prolonged smoking of high THC strains of marijuana, and some of the stuff coming out of Colorado now is can be extremely high in THC, can alter the way the neurons grow in the brain. And exactly what that means in terms of deficiencies or problems, cognitive problems, we're not absolutely sure. We need to study it more. Of course, it's a very difficult thing to study. Here, teenager, take a lot of THC and then we'll study your brain. There's ample evidence that something is going on there. He's also very clear, Mechoulam is, on the fact that among some people, for whatever reason, THC and marijuana in general can cause extremely powerful and very, you know, frightening, very dangerous anxiety attacks. It's why some people react that way is a curiosity, you know.
You know, it kind of reminds me of alcoholism. For 90% of us or so in the United States, alcohol is, and I'll have a glass of wine or a beer from time to time. It's a fun little way to escape, and there's really no long-lasting problems. But for those that are genetically alcoholics,
right,
and I have a friend who is, this is something that he dare not have. It's like someone who has a peanut allergy dare not have peanuts, whereas I don't think twice before eating some peanuts. Someone who's an alcoholic, for them, alcohol is extremely dangerous. It is extremely addictive and virtually impossible to stop for that limited group of people that are alcoholics. Perhaps there's marijuana-holics, I don't know what the right term is, but people for whom, just like those with peanut allergies or those with that are alcoholics, they shouldn't be ingesting marijuana, but that is a small percentage of the people, definitely not the majority.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's definitely a drug. It affects people fairly profoundly, and there are certain people who seem to be, if not physically, you know, the whole question of addiction is an interesting one, whether marijuana can cause physical addiction. Most people think it really can't, but certainly
psychological addiction. You rely on
something. Psychologically
addicted
to it, wake and bake, and, you know, just smoke all day. And, you know, to say that doesn't have an effect on them is well, you know, it obviously does.
Yeah, it's an escape. I mean, it can be video games. There are people who have hard lives and want to escape. And in fact, that probably is my personal addiction, not video games, but games. Mark Grimaldi, our producer, was talking about how I have a bit of a board game fetish.
Right.
You know, me, I could play bridge and poker all day, every day until I collapse. So, you know, we all have our issues.
Sure.
Let me
just go back and say one thing about Mechoulam. It's kind of odd to think that, you know, I had to fly all the way to Jerusalem to find the world's greatest pot expert, and when you sit down, and he is a celebrity in this world, when you sit down with him, you realize he's never smoked pot in his life.
Really?
He's straight as an arrow. He's very conservatively dressed. He's a very serious scientist. He's been nominated for the Nobel Prize in chemistry. He sits on the board of all kinds of academic institutions. He does not like recreational marijuana. He thinks it's silly. He thinks it demeans this plant, which should be just treated as a
drug,
as a medical
drug. That's very interesting.
Anyone should go to jail over possessing,
right,
recreationally possessing marijuana, but he really thinks we need to take this seriously as a medical product and kind of leave the recreational aside. But he's very serious and not, I don't want to say stern. He's got a good sense of humor, but he is not kind of what I expected when I heard. Oh,
you thought you'd see Willie Nelson when you got there.
Something like that, right?
I'll tell you what, we got to take another break, Hampton. But I got to tell you, this scientist is after my own heart because I'm also a non-pot smoker that strongly thinks that no one should go to jail for anything like this, unless you're doing it while driving or something like that. But our jails are way too full of nonviolent drug users. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, here's your last chance. 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
I'm your host, Mark Levine. See, in the 60s, they had too much fun. They had sex, drugs, and rock and roll. A lot of that drug was marijuana. And so in 1970, they said, the fun has to stop. Marijuana's been a Schedule I drug ever since. But my guest, Hampton Sides, has been talking about the medical effects of marijuana and not just the kind of thing, my cousin says it makes... No, really detailed from scientists. Hampton, you talked about the fact, we talked about that really it's illegal to do a lot of studies in the United States. You talked about what's going on in Israel. How about in Europe, the Netherlands? Are there serious scientists doing serious studies published in serious peer-reviewed medical journals about the medical benefits of marijuana?
Absolutely, and more and more. I mean, it's really reaching a critical mass. There are cannabis associations of doctors now who have conventions, and, it's not just... groovy guys, in Amsterdam, but it's like serious scientists who study, move from rats and mice and these kinds of models to humans and human trials. Maybe the most interesting one that I interviewed was a guy in Spain, in Madrid, Dr. Manuel Guzman, who has been in his lab. He's been eradicating and certainly shrinking and in some cases eradicating aggressive brain tumors in rats and mice. Using THC, pure THC, and it's
brain tumors.
They're so promising that now a major trial is underway in Leeds, England, to study this very thing and see if it works in humans.
How does THC reduce tumors?
Go ahead.
How does THC reduce tumors?
He doesn't fully understand it. He has some theories about how it does. Basically, marijuana in general, THC in particular, well, and also CBD, have some kind of a role in both what is called neuroprotection, protecting the neurons of your brain and your neurological system from all kinds of stresses and traumas. It also seems to have a role in basically turning cancer cells off, causing them to essentially commit suicide.
Wow.
And the mechanism of action is something that is not very well understood, but the results are irrefutable in rats and mice. So now the effort is to make it happen in humans. And
when cancer patients use it, I thought it was mostly to stop the nausea effect of cancer drugs, but you're telling me it might actually kill the cancer cells.
Yes. Now, we've got to say all kinds of caveats. There's a million kinds of cancers, and everybody's different. Their metabolisms are different. What works in one person might not work in everyone. But this is one of the more promising areas of exploring the possibility that cannabis might be an anti-cancer agent.
Wow.
You're right. There's no question about the fact that cancer can help. Can help with chemo patients.
It's not just that people want to get high, folks. There are real medical uses that at least need to be explored. And Hampton Sides, I want to thank you for coming on the Inside Scoop and sharing that with me. This is Mark Levine. Talk to me. Tweet at me at Mark Levine Talk. See you tomorrow.